Hi, Steve Van Meter here, and welcome to Macro Monday, where we talk macro, try to make sense of markets that, you know, really don't make any sense, and answer your questions. So my wife told me that my channel needed two things this weekend. She said you need new arrows, so she made me a whole bunch of them. She also said you need a haircut, and I'm going to do it. And I said, I didn't know you knew how to cut hair. She goes, I don't, but I watched some YouTube videos. I said, okay, I'm game. What's the worst that could happen? Well, I think she did a pretty good job, and we'll see what she thinks after she watches a video when I get home tonight. So what's going on in the world of macro? We heard from legendary investor Warren Buffett that he sold a bunch of, well, all of his airline stocks at a loss and had a very gloomy outlook for the economy going forward. And this man, through his Berkshire Hathaway holding company, is sitting on over near $140 billion worth of client money to invest, and he does not see any opportunities in this market. It's a pretty big deal because Warren is well known for buying stocks low. Not always, but when they're near the bottom, he's usually a big buyer. Doesn't mean he's perfect with all of his trades, obviously. I mean, who could have foreseen the airlines plummeting like they did to the when the coronavirus showed up? I mean, nobody knew that was going to happen. But nevertheless, he's sitting on a massive war chest and holding tight to it. Now, we saw crude oil rally today, which I thought was interesting because over the weekend, I read a report that said there's 375 million barrels of oil floating on tanker ships out at sea. And it's important to understand that these are not counted in any government reports. It is possible this week we might see some small crude oil draws because the tanks are pretty full. And when you get to the top, I mean, they have to keep some margin for blending and for other things. They don't just fill it right to the very tip top and put a cap on it. I mean, there's some margin that can fluctuate a little bit. And I'm concerned that people are going to think if that happens, it's really bullish. And yet you have a record amount of crude oil sitting at sea and more ships being brought out to hold crude oil. So pretty interesting there. And as far as the day-to-day, we got the durable goods and new orders, which is interesting. And this is a chart that Dr. Chris Dark and I worked on, and mostly credit to his math skills for getting this correct. But we have, we came up with how to look at what the consumer is doing, because durable good new orders puts a lot of emphasis on things of defense spending and aircraft spending. And look, let's face it, we're not out buying tanks and airplanes. As cool as that might be, we're just not doing it. But what is the consumer up to? So we take the new orders of consumer goods less defense spending and less transportation equipment, including non-defense aircraft and parts. And what we find is on a year-over-year basis, this thing is, well, let's zoom in a little bit, is down 6.3%. So that's quite a bit, but this is down. Now, people often ask, how do you gauge where things are going? Treasury yields, when in doubt, treasury yields. And here I've overlaid 7-year treasury yields, and you can see, obviously, there's not a perfect correlation, but it gives you the general direction. So when yields are falling, we can expect durable goods, new orders to fall. So we know the consumer is weak, and we're going to expect further weakness from them. Now, going on Twitter today, and I've been asked several times, Steve, are you on Twitter? If my firm can, some of you don't realize that I am a licensed money manager. And because I'm licensed and regulated, my firm has to comply with everything I say and do. And that includes stuff online. So we don't have the ability to comply with Twitter at this time. But I do have an account to lurk and follow people that I think are important, that I want to know what they have to say. And today, Teddy Vallee posted this chart, and I haven't had a chance to go through the report yet because it did come out today, and it was a net percentage of banks tightening credit card standards. And what this indicates is that banks are reducing or limiting the amount of credit card debt. Or if you're applying for a new one, they're maybe limiting how much your credit line will be. And you can see going back to 2007, 8, and 9, when banks tighten credit card standards, they do it during recessions. And What he didn't overlay here, which I'll try to work on if I can get this same chart in the FRED databases, is what you will see is interest rates go down when banks tighten lending standards. So let's go on, and I want to come back to Friday's video a little bit. And there was a number of questions are, Steve, can you disclose your positions, your trades, your client positions? The answer is no, I can't. This is not a trading channel. I cannot disclose my positions. Did you just recently enter a position? Have you been in this position? I cannot disclose that. All I can tell you, if I've had this deflationary view for a very long time, for many years, and I just thought it was important to share with you that I do believe in my own research, and that's not very common in my industry. You see a lot of people have opinions about things, but they're in how they manage their own money or their client money, depending on where they're at, it doesn't sync up. And so I felt that was important to share with you that I do believe in my own research. So I want to come back and we're going to dig deeper into this. You know, if you were not convinced that quantitative easing is deflationary, we're going to do more on Friday and probably the next week and dig deeper into what this thing really is. But there's all this sudden excitement of states are reopening. It's going to be inflationary and yields are going to go up. Oh my God, there's going to be so much inflation. And what's weird is 30 million people being unemployed. Oh, that's inflationary. People losing their their businesses. That's inflationary. People getting government checks. Inflationary. States reopening. Inflationary. Do you get it? Everything is inflationary. Yet for 40 years, we've had yields going down. 40 years. Pretty good. She made little notes on the back so I could seem really cool. And anyways, all this stuff sounds inflationary, but it's not. Let's go back to the money multiplier. Let's look at this a little bit, and then we'll get into your questions. So the money multiplier is showing us that deflation is coming because this ratio is falling. And the ratio is made up of two components that are the critical components. One is money flowing into institutional money funds, and number two, quantitative easing. So if we look at quantitative easing, which is the total balances maintained at Federal Reserve banks expressed as a monetary base, we can pull up this chart here, and we know for a fact that the Fed is doing more QE in terms of dollar amount than there is money flowing into institutional money funds. So even if the world goes back to normal, as long as the Feds continue to do quantitative easing or the amount of money in institutional money funds starts to go down, I don't have an arrow for that, you get deflation. And I don't think that's what people understand. They keep saying, oh, everything's inflationary. Interest rates are going to go up. Not when the Fed's doing quantitative easing. It's highly deflationary. The only way we could get higher yields under this scenario is if more money flows into institutional money funds, meaning more investors sell their stocks and sell their bonds and sell to get inflation. Is that realistic? No. And that's why in 2008 and 2009, we saw the money multiplier crash, and it had nothing to do with money flowing into institutional money funds, because it did slow down as this thing tanked. What it had to do is the relentless effort of the Fed doing quantitative easing. And we know, based on Jay Powell's recent testimony from his press release, they're not going to stop. And they have way more money at their disposal than investors do. And there will be a limit where investors stop putting money into money markets, or they'll slow the rate way down. And starting on Fridays, we're going to look at that a little closer. I'm going to pull the six-month and three-month rate of change so we can see this thing as it starts to slow down. And so as everyone gets excited about inflation, not as long as the Fed's doing QE. QE is very, very deflationary. All right. Let's get into some of your questions. Hey, Steve, wanted to say that the latest video was amazing. Thank you very much. Thanks for putting it out there. You're very, very welcome. I appreciate it. I did have one question. If one were a bond bull, interest rates have not much more to go. referring lower. In this scenario, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of upside for a bond investor. And am I wrong? What am I missing? That's a great question. So what I wanted to do is show you how to find out what kind of upside is in the fund that you might be in. So what I did is I picked the largest bond mutual fund. This is just an example. It is not something I'm suggesting that you do. I picked it because if you're employed and you have a 401k, odds are you have this fund or a very similar fund in it available to you. So let's take a look. So what I did is I went to Morningstar.com and I put in the Vanguard Total Bond Market Index mutual fund symbol up here, and it brought up all this information. I'm going to go to portfolio. And what I'm looking for is something called the effective duration. So what it says is the effective duration of this fund is 6.21%, meaning for every 1% interest rates go down, the fund goes up 6.21%. And for every 1% interest rates go up, the fund goes down 6.21%. Now, this is relative to the average maturity, which is 8 years. Now, there are no 8-year treasury bonds to go look at. So what I did then is I went over to investing.com, and let's see if we can refresh this and I'll show you. So I went to, under markets, bonds, world government bonds, and then I narrowed it down to US bonds. And the closest thing is 7-year treasury yield. So they closed at 0.53%. So let's just round it to 0.5% just for sake of what we're doing here. And so what you could simply say is that if 7-year treasury yields went to zero, this fund, so you take 0.5 times 6.21, so roughly this fund will go up a little over 3% if 7-year treasury yields go to zero. On the way, you will also collect the dividend or the yield, which is, let's see, 1.51%. So you'll collect that along the way, and you'll have the opportunity, if deflation occurs, to buy assets at a lower price point. That's the thing about bonds that people don't often understand, is not only making the dividend or the yield off of it, but you're also making depreciation and the opportunity in deflation to buy real assets at a lower price. That is, it's almost the last one that's even the icing on the cake on this deal. So I hope that helps. And you can look this up for any bond mutual fund or bond ETF. And you probably can find the same information on individual bonds as well, if that's kind of what you're up to investing in. Okay, let's go on to the next question. Thanks for your wonderfully informative videos. They have been an incredible educational tool for me in better understanding the market forces at work. Awesome. That's really cool. And you're very welcome. In your last video, this is an old question, you mentioned that Fed makes decisions that lose money and U.S. Treasury and U.S. taxpayers eat the losses. Can you talk a little bit about what this means for the financial health of the U.S.? So let's revisit what this means real quick. The Fed announced last month they're going to buy corporate bonds. And effectively what they do is they create what's called a special purpose vehicle, or trash can, because what do you put in trash cans? You put trash. And so they hired BlackRock, and the Fed is going to allocate some money to buying junk bonds and put them in a trash can. And I don't know how much money they've allocated to it. It's really immaterial to what the question is. So the Fed announced today, after a pretty big name hedge fund manager said on Friday, I haven't seen the Fed buying anything. So what is this kind of a bogus deal of the Fed talking the market back up? Well, then the Fed came out and said, no, we're going to get to that here in May. So BlackRock's going to take however much money the Fed has allocated to the trash can and go out and buy a bunch of junk bonds and put them in there and close the lid. That's what they're going to do. Now, at some point in the future, the Fed's hope is everything will smooth out, the value of these bonds will go back up, and they will be sold as a profit. So they'll hire somebody, maybe BlackRock again, I don't know who, but they will hire someone else to come, or someone to come in and sell those back to the market at a future point. Assuming they make a profit on it, the Fed cannot participate in any gains. All that profit is turned back over to the U.S. Treasury. But let's say that they're sold at a loss. Well, the U.S. Treasury has to make up the loss because the Fed cannot lose money. on a transaction. They cannot lose money. So if these bonds were sold at a loss later on, what does it tell us for the health of the economy? It wasn't good. The goal would be for the Fed to sell them, hopefully sell them as, at a gain. How long they can keep them in there when they do, I don't know what the terms are, but that's, but the U.S. Treasury backstops the Fed in this case. With quantitative easing, next question, with quantitative easing, is it possible that stocks will artificially continue to rise even as TLT rises? Since I can't give trading advice, let's reword this. Will stocks continue to rise, so where's my rising stocks, as yields fall? So let's see, I've got stocks rising and yields falling. There we go. The answer is yes, that can happen. In fact, that is the normal, well, it's not the normal ratio, but yes, this can happen for extended period of time. Now, eventually, either yields will need to go up and stocks will need to go down, or stocks, wait, did I get that right? Yeah, no, either yields will need to go up to match stocks, or stocks will go down to catch up to yields, and my opinion is stocks will go down to meet up with yields. That's what's more likely to happen. Why? Because the Fed is easing. Let's go on to the next rest of the question. They say bonds are rising, the VIX is high. So they're saying bonds are appreciating value, interest rates are falling, volatility is high. I would imagine stocks should peak and retest lows. That is no longer the consensus view, but then the comment was, but with so much quantitative easing. Quantitative easing has no bearing on stock prices, even though everyone thinks it does. And this is really the mystique of the Fed. Because just like they came out and said, hey, we're going to buy junk bonds, and all of a sudden the junk bond index went, do I have a bond? No, I don't. All of a sudden bond prices, we'll use this one, went up. They did the same with QE, because why do people buy stocks when they talk about, when the Fed talks about QE? Because they think that's what it does. The Fed doesn't care. The Fed could call it anything. If you go out and buy stocks and go spend money, they'll call it anything that you'd want them to call. But the reality of the situation is quantitative easing is nothing more than swapping an average maturity 7-year U.S. Treasury note with cash from the bank. So they swap it with the banks. So the Fed goes and buys those bonds off the banks, gives the banks cash, and the banks are forced to deposit that cash in an account at the Federal Reserve member banks. That's it. There's no stock transactions involved. So if somehow having cash in Federal Reserve banks caused stock prices to go up, why wouldn't we just put all this cash in? Why don't we put quadrillions of dollars in there and watch stocks just go up indefinitely? It's not how it works. Investors believe quantitative easing causes stock prices to go up, but why didn't it go up in 1930? When they did quantitative easing back in the Great Depression, it didn't cause stock prices to go up, they went down. Why didn't it cause stock prices to go up during the Great Financial Crisis? I recall during quantitative easing one, stock prices crashed. Because people believe. And as far as the Fed concerned, talking is their one of their biggest things that they can do. Next question. I really enjoy your video series on YouTube. Thank you very much. I want to ask a couple questions regarding your latest video from 424. You can tell I'm a bit behind. You said in your video that quantitative tightening is deflationary. Yes. But you also said that quantitative easing is not inflationary. I'm having a hard time reconciling the two. I can understand. So whenever I'm having trouble with something, I try to make an exaggerated example. So what is quantitative tightening? When Fed raises interest rates, right? They drive yields higher. Well, imagine what would happen in a world if they put interest rates up really high. What if mortgage rates were 7% on a 30-year? What if car loans were 10%? What if credit card rates were 30? Do you think there'd be a big economic boom? No. People would stop moving. People would stop spending on credit cards, as people would stop buying cars until they absolutely had to. And then they would save more money along the way to put down. So that would cripple the economy. Now, eventually, it would create inflation. But in the short run, it would deflate the economy because people would just stop buying that stuff. They would literally stop. I mean, imagine if you had credit card rates and they went way up, you'd start paying them down. if you're going to refi your house to pay off some debt, and you wouldn't at 7%, you wouldn't. You say, well, I'll just keep this mortgage. I'm not going to move. So how is lowering rates deflationary? Well, we can see that in the money multiplier. And you have to understand, the Fed is a purpose-built vehicle to quell and stop inflation. They do not have the tools, mechanisms, or ability to create inflation. Their job is to stop it. So inadvertently, everything they do ends up being deflationary. This is why, if you look at a historical chart of Treasury yields, you can see over the last 40 years, despite all the Fed's efforts to make inflation, interest rates have gone down. Well, how can it be for 40 years they can't figure out how to make inflation? Because they don't have the ability to. Now, they could do it if they slowly raise rates over a very long period of time and let the market adjust. But anytime they raise rates and stock prices start to go down, what does the Fed do? Oh my God, panic! We can't do that quick. Quantitative easing, drop interest rates. This is the same story every time. If you want inflation, if you want higher yields, you have to expect the economy has to contract down before it can adjust to it. Now, could we adjust to 7% mortgages? Could we adjust to 10% car loans? Yes, but we can't do it fast. It would take a bit of time, maybe decades. The Fed's not that patient. Hopefully that answers your question. I loved yesterday's show. As always, you referenced the Kondratiev wave and how deflation was coming. Now, this is interesting because I can't say the guy's name properly, but here's what I was referring to. Now, the long wave group, I don't have a relationship with, and they don't really keep these charts up anymore, but this is the most recent one I could find. And what the Kondratiev wave is a long wave economic cycle that runs around 80 to 100 years. And it usually ends with winter, where we are headed now. And so the question, and I'll leave that up there for you to take a look at. The question is, and how deflation is coming. You mentioned how deflation lasts about 2 to 3 years. That's generally my opinion. What follows a deflationary period? Mild inflation, strong inflation, hyperinflation, or do we still stay in a low inflation or disinflation, deflation for a while? That is a fantastic question because there is no actual answer. If we can find a way to devalue the dollar, which is the world's reserve currency, and how we would exactly do that, I'm not 100% sure, because it would require everyone else to let their currency appreciate against the dollar, well, we could have fairly high inflation. If we changed the Federal Reserve Act in 1937 and allow the Fed to print money, we would have hyperinflation. If we do nothing, we will have, in my opinion, a brief period of inflation. Maybe it may feel high. It may not be high, but it may feel high, and then we'll return to a deflationary tone. Because when you have too much government debt, you get deflation, and then the Fed's going to find themselves perhaps in perpetual quantitative easing. And what do we see based on the money multiplier? Well, quantitative easing is deflationary. We know this from Japan. We know this in Europe, where they've done it more and they've done it longer than we have. But we know the money multiplier says as long as the Fed is doing quantitative easing, they can't create inflation. So for exactly what's going to happen, not sure. But assuming everything stays the way it is, there'll be a period of inflation where everyone gets excited, and then it'll revert back to deflation or disinflation. Let's see how we're doing on time. Okay, let's see. Thanks for your videos. They've really helped me understand the current macro situation better. You're very welcome. I was wondering if when yields bottom out, will that mean the long-term outlook for bond returns on a risk-return basis is poor? Yeah, I think so. I mean, you got to understand, if interest rates are zero, why would you buy a bond? Unless you're in a strategy that requires it. So let's say you're in a traditional asset allocation model that has to have some bonds, has to have some treasuries, and they're at a zero yield, well, then they're going to be in your portfolio. That's just the way it's going to be. Pension funds will be forced to buy them because they need to hold treasuries. Why would you buy a treasury bond at a 0% rate? Because you think yields are going negative. That would really be the only reason. But in terms of price appreciation, not a whole lot. So I would agree that on a risk return basis, is poor unless you knew a lot of deflation was coming. If that is the case, will there be a flow of money from bonds to other assets? And if so, which other assets are likely to flow to? Usually the smart money is selling bonds at the bottom of the market bottom of the equity market, at the peak of the bond market, to buy stocks. So eventually what happens is you'll see other people over the years that fall sell their bonds and buy into stocks. Could people thinking yields have already bottomed account for the current irrational stock rally? Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. People do think interest rates in the U.S. are too low, and they always think that. So yeah, I would totally agree with that. You mentioned that all one needs to do to understand where markets are heading is to study the bond markets. Yep, that's what I think, macro, from a macro standpoint. Are there any text papers you're referring to specifically? Unfortunately, no. I've actually cobbled together everything that you're hearing from various different sources and then kind of my own thoughts in terms of how the system actually works. There isn't really one source. In fact, most sources I have looked at are wrong. And so I've just taken the best from the best people I can find out there, though some living, most of them dead, and, you know, kind of put them all together, and I'm sharing them with you. Or did you mean things like many Fed graphs that you pull up for comparisons and information of various sources? That's the easiest way for me to show you how things work, is a publicly available website where you can easily kind of copy the charts by, you know, typing the word Fred into a search engine and then maybe whatever title I've got at the top. You know, when I first started doing this, a lot of people would show Fred charts, but they'd hide the titles or the axes, and I had to kind of guess and figure it out. So I think it's really cool that not only do I show you what it is, but I'll show you how I invert things, I'll show you how I add things, so you can learn and you can be more educated. All right, with the price of oil crashing, it's amazing to watch how oil stocks have been holding up against many cases still rising. Can you make any sense of this? What are your thoughts? I can't make any sense of it other than usually the stock leads the commodity, so people are bidding up oil company stocks thinking this is a great buying opportunity. When they realize that it is not, they will become big sellers. I think oil stocks are going to be dirt cheap. I don't know for years if they're going to be a buy. I still believe many of these companies will slash their dividends. You know, but when you have 375 million barrels floating around offshore and you have above ground storage full and you have a massively weakened global economy and 30 million, at least, Americans unemployed for the time being, and you have businesses that are going to open up at limited capacity and may not even get back to where they were, and you have a lot of small businesses that are going to end up failing over this, the outlook for oil in the short term, to me, not that great. Couple years, maybe 2-3 years, that different story. But short term, no. Two more questions, and then we'll get on to how hedge funds are positioned. Do you think Trump's announcement to build China $160 billion will reignite the trade war? Look, I was never big in believing in the trade war anyways. I didn't think China could honor it to begin with. I mean, it's not how the world all liquidity cycle works. What impact do you think that will have on bond yields? Down. Like that? I feel like a game show. They'll go down. Why is that? Because if there's a trade war, what happens? We tariff China. Presumably, that's what we're going to do some more of, if that's what we're referring to. And what does that do to global trade? Well, it causes global trade to go down. If you cause global trade to go down, it causes world all liquidity to slow down even more, and you get deflation. Yeah. What are the best charts for looking at inflation over the years other than CPI, treasury yields? So here's CPI. Treasury yields tell me what direction consumer prices are most likely headed. Mind you, consumer prices do kind of tend to exaggerate from time to time, one direction or another. Crude oil would obviously be another chart to look at. And the last question is, what investments earn you the most during deflationary time? That would be U.S. Treasury securities. The longer the duration, the bigger the return. Longer duration, the bigger potential loss too, if you're on the wrong side of where interest rates are moving. Okay, let's take a look at how hedge funds are positioned. And so we see they have extended their short position slightly on 10-year treasuries. How about 30-year, the long bond? They backed off. Now, this is as of Tuesday of last week. But mind you, they're still very, very short. A small move like this isn't a big deal, but they're still very, very short. And I wouldn't be surprised if when we see as of tomorrow, if they increase these shorts, because we saw over the end of last week that yields got pushed up a little bit. So my guess is they're still very, very short. And we see crude oil almost at its longest speculative long position in history, getting back up there as investors by the massive dip in oil prices, hoping they're going to go up. And obviously, they're hedging their big losses that they took to begin with. I think these people are completely on the wrong side of that position. Hedge funds are increasing their short positions, betting the stocks are going to reverse. Haven't yet, but they're betting on it. We see gold futures, roughly no change here, but usually as speculators back off their long positions in gold, gold prices do follow lower. NASDAQ, they're still slightly long. Small caps, they're still short. And the US dollar, they're slightly increasing their longs. And I still think the dollar's got a big move coming here. And they backed off their volatility shorts. You'd think if they're short stocks, they should be long volatility. At least that's kind of what makes sense to me. And let's go take a look at some charts. And then we'll wrap up for the day. And here, let's take a look at the S&P 500. It rallied off of 2,800 today. Will it come back and retest its overhead support? I have no idea what it's going to do over the next couple of days. But to me, the trend is lower here. As far as Treasury yields go, we saw 30-year yields get up and hit 1.3% again and knocked on the door. Knocked on the door, could not break. And it still tells me that speculators need to get, if they want yields to go higher, they need to break 1.4. It doesn't look like that's going to happen given they're so deep in their short positions. 1.2 to the downside means we're looking at a retest or potential breakthrough of the all-time lows. Let's look at TLT where we can see this in a little more granular form. Let's zoom in and we can see this dotted line is pretty close to 1.3%. And over the last 3 days, bounced off 1.3, bounced off 1.3, bounced off 1.3, bounced off 1.3. So it tells you a retest of 1.2% is coming, which is roughly where this purple line is. We can see an overnight trading. Foreign investors have generally been buying treasuries at this price, but somebody keeps selling. Usually is definitely during U.S. Hours, but the Fed is still buying bonds, so not a major issue to me. But from a bigger picture, this is a long consolidation pattern, and the longer it consolidates to me with the Fed buying and the money multiplier falling, you get a break to the upside, the final big move in the bond bull market before you probably see the smart money selling. And let's take a look at the dollar, symbol DXY. It's bouncing along, made it back over its 50-day moving average. Everybody thinks the dollar's headed lower. I still think the dollar's headed much, much higher. But the Fed is having some impact. Their easing programs have worked, but the dollar is still stuck right around this $99 to $100 level. And then crude oil today moved higher as, again, people are betting that crude oil is going to go up. Now it's at $21 a barrel. I think that's just a mistake of a move from people who don't understand what they're doing. Again, I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for being with me today. I hope you learned a lot. Again, we're going to continue this deeper dive into the deflationary theme on Friday, but we'll be back on Wednesday to answer more of your questions, see what kind of fun macro data is giving us, and of course, take a look at some charts. Again, thanks for watching. See you Wednesday. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. The material is not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, financial product, instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was paired by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Opinions expressed in the video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advising or Steve Van Meter Financial.